Listening Library presents A Place for Vanishing by Anne Freistadt. Read for you by Sophie Amos. Content warnings for A Place for Vanishing include mental health themes, suicide, disgust attempt, ideation, bipolar disorder, cyclothymia, bipolar 3. Anxiety, depression, self-harm, cutting, hallucinations, and delusions. Graphic violence, overdose, disgust. Bullying, cyberbullying, mentioned. Strong language, profanity. Mild sexual content. For those of us with divergent minds who see things differently, never forget. The world needs us. Author's note. While I would describe A Place for Vanishing as a mental health recovery story, one that carries hope and growth and a hell of a lot of fight, this book centers on a character recuperating from a suicide attempt. At times, she struggles with lingering suicidal ideation, and she reckons throughout with a recent bipolar 3 diagnosis. Another character has wounds that appear to be self-inflicted by cutting. Please use your best judgment about whether this story is right for you. If you or someone you know is considering self-harm, please visit 988lifeline.org or call or text the national, U.S.-based Suicide and Life Crisis Lifeline at 988. Support is 24/7, free and confidential. The International Association for Suicide Prevention also offers additional lifelines and international resources at findahelpline.com. Above all, please take care of yourself. Chapter 1. Days like this made me wish I'd never come back from the dead. Since the doctors dragged me back 6 weeks ago, life sometimes felt foggy, like a strange dream. But nothing was stranger than this. Sitting in Mom's road-weary sedan, gaping through my window at the house towering over the yard, the street, our car, us. The house stared back. The crumbling Queen Anne Victorian was massive, solid. It sank into the earth like it had roots coiled 500 feet down. Do you like it, girls? Mom turned to me in the passenger seat and my 13-year-old sister in the back. Since I had returned from the psych ward, her every word came glazed in honey, the way you might talk to a 5-year-old if you were bad with kids. I couldn't find the breath to answer her. I rolled down the window, that thin veneer between me and the house, inch by inch. The summer air climbed into the car with us, sticky and suffocating. This was the house Mom had inherited from her parents? The one that Mom, a real estate agent, had ignored for decades? Had never even tried to sell? I was stunned by the sheer size, the extravagance. The house had to be over a century old, with its spindly spires and lacy woodwork. In places, the white trim was still so shiny and marshmallowy that it hurt my teeth. But age and rot had left their marks too. Faded cobalt paint encased the house's shingled body, peeling like sunburned skin. Weathered wood boarded every window. It was like the place was guarding against a hurricane decades in the making. And it was like the neighbors knew. Football field-sized gaps sat between our property and the single-family ranch homes on either side. They hunkered low, less than half the height of our monstrosity. The longer I stared, the more my chest tightened under my seatbelt. The house's steep roof lines towered with octagonal turrets and sharply gabled dormers, masking the layout inside. It felt like the kind of puzzle that if you stared long enough, revealed a whole new picture, one hiding smugly just under the surface. There had to be some reason it had sat empty so long. Maybe the neighbors in their flinching houses knew something I didn't. Worse, Maybe Mom knew something I didn't. All this time, she'd been holing us up in a two-bedroom apartment a couple of counties over, and she'd made this place sound like some rinky-dink shack.
Mom?
I said finally. I thought you said this house was worthless.
No.
Mom hid her hands in her lap, tearing at her thumb's cuticle, a habit I'd inherited, but she'd tried to kick to set an example. It wasn't the best fit for us before, but I couldn't have said worthless. She had definitely said worthless. It was only since my stint in the hospital that Mom had started singing this house's praises. Suddenly decided this was the place for us after all. Anything to get me into a new school before the fall crept up on us. I looked over my shoulder at Vivi, hoping she'd help me call Mom out. She'd been there for the same conversations I had. But she ducked my glance.
It's great, Mom, she said, though her chirping voice came out uncertain, a little thin. Maybe we could check out the inside? Right, Libby?
Likely she was prodding me to play along for Mom's sake. And she was probably right. I should. For better or worse, this was our new home, and I wanted to love it. The old-timey embellishments weren't without their charm. The size was astounding. I just couldn't shake the strange sensation gnawing at my brain that something was wrong. Maybe it was me who was wrong. I'd caused a lot of misery lately. I owed it to Mom and Vivi to make them feel good.
Sorry, Mom. I was just surprised, I lied dutifully.
Once I adjusted to my new medicine, Dr. Glazer said it would get easier to smile. For now, I had to settle for a stiff flash of teeth and hope I didn't look as much like a grinning skeleton as I felt.
Give us the grand tour.
The grand tour?
Yes, Mom echoed with new life. A little color flushed back into her white cheeks, and she fluffed her shoulder-length brown curls like it was showtime. This time, I'd said the right thing. I followed Mom and Vivi out of the car, past the white spiked fence. On the cracked front walkway, I craned my neck until it twinged, peering at the house overhead. This place delighted in asymmetry. The whole thing felt unsteady, like any second it might topple down to crush us. And yet I couldn't look away. You didn't take your eyes off a snake sizing up your ankle. Somehow this place filled me with the same uneasy impulse.
Don't you love all this ornamental trim? That's called gingerbread. Isn't that sweet?
Mom cooed, in full saleswoman mode.
And the yard needs some sprucing, but can you believe the potential?
She swept her arms around like the star of some musical, inviting Vivi and me to join her on stage. We nodded and managed the appropriate murmurs of admiration, but the yard was a patchy yellow, sun-dried to straw. Even the stray dandelions had been reduced to scraggly stems. Maybe it had been less bedraggled when Mom had lived here as a kid, but decades of neglect had amounted to decades of decay. Strangely, the only plants thriving were the shaggy bushes that wrapped around the base of the house and the inner perimeter of the fence. Glossy leaves, blue buds. They pulsed with cicadas, buzzed with wasps, and they bloomed in the early July heat, oblivious to the steaming roads and sidewalks. Blue roses, Mom told us, if you can believe it. I don't remember much from my time in this house when I was little, but those made an impression. Usually florists have to dye roses blue. They aren't supposed to grow in the wild. I glanced down the street, expecting to spot them in nearby yards if they were local to the area. But the rest of the block was all puffy popcorn balls of hydrangeas and cherry pink crepe myrtles. This tangle of impossibly blue roses was ours alone. I examined the nearest bush, with its clusters of thorns and red-veined leaves. The petals, arranged in mesmerizing swirls, were velvety soft against my finger, but oddly thick for a rose, almost meaty. Floral perfume billowed into my nose, so heavy it was practically mind-altering. Had never seen or smelled anything like it. Still, for Mom's sake, I was grateful. She had always had an appetite for gardening,
Swamp.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?